You're listening to a podcast from 702.
Across the Desk
with Clement Maniatela
on 702.
It's time for our Across the Desk feature. And as I indicated earlier, I want us to spend this hour exploring the field of reputational management and communications. I'm hosting communications consultant Chris Vick. I'm also hosting Lerato Kadiako, who's the founder and CEO at African Ambition. The reality is, for every brand, right, you need a good appearance in the public. There's a lot that happens behind the scenes. And part of the job of reputational managers is to manage what happens behind the scenes and what's in the public as well, and how that is being communicated. So they want to control the narrative. And I actually wonder what actually goes on in the life of a communications consultant, of a reputation manager. Because when I looked at the definition of reputation management, one of the definitions is the practice of influencing stakeholder perceptions and public conversations about an organization and its brand. It includes monitoring perceptions and conversations, responding to reputation threats, and proactively seizing opportunities to boost reputation. And I read that line again, responding to reputational threats. And that sounded so scary to me. And I thought, how far are reputational managers and communication consultants willing to go to respond to a reputational threat? So, Chris Vick and Lerato Kadiaka are joining us now. And if you've got some questions for them, you want to weigh in the conversation, maybe you are in the reputational management space, you're welcome to give me a call on 011-883-0702 or your WhatsApp voice note on 072-702-1702. Chris Vick, welcome back to 702. Good morning.
Morning, Clement. How are you doing?
I'm all right, man. Thank you so much for making time.
It's a pleasure. It's a good topic. Very relevant.
Yeah, very relevant indeed. Lerato Kadiaka, thank you so much for also joining us. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement. How are you doing this morning?
I'm all right. Thank you, guys, for making time. Chris, I indicated earlier that when I was looking at one of the definitions of reputation management, I thought, because part of it is responding to reputational threats. And I thought, how far are reputational managers willing to go to respond to a threat like that? How far have you gone? or are you going to the cemetery with that?
No, well, I mean, I can put forward the caveat that I have confidentiality agreements on all the work that I do, so I cannot answer that question. But in principle, Clement, I mean, it depends on the client. You know, I think reputation managers, we can give advice, we can do things, we can spot threats that are coming, but it's ultimately the client's call whether they want to work completely overtly and upfront, whether they expect covert work to be done. So you would present options. And let the client make the decision which option they're comfortable with. That's generally how it works. But I must say, in this era of misinformation, fake news, lies, it's increasingly challenging to play a clean game because you're up against people who...
They're not playing to the rules.
Well, we do. To the extent that there are rules, we play to them, right? But as I say, when you're up against people who are deliberately dropping lies about a client,
yeah,
spreading misinformation, you have to adapt. And I mean, social media obviously has made a huge difference in terms of that too. But in my experience, it's a bit like being a trial lawyer. You know, you deal with a client who is the public equivalent of being charged with murder. And if they say, "I didn't do it," you have to believe them and you have to try and defend their reputation on the basis of that. If you later find out that they did do it, obviously that affects your reputation and affects the work that you do.
Mm.
But you really are generally at the mercy of the client in terms of knowing exactly what the reputational threat is and therefore how you should respond to it. I often compare it to an onion. You know, you're confronted with an onion that says there's a particular crisis. You peel away one layer and there's another one and there's another one and there's another one.
Yeah.
But I must say, it's probably the most exciting career to have at the moment because there just is so much going on.
Sure.
And so much sensitivity around people's reputation.
Wow, exciting. And Lerato, I'm just thinking, as Chris Vick says, exciting. And I'm thinking, but you are basically responsible for either the survival or the death of this brand or this organization. It's basically in your hands where they're bringing you in and they're like, clean up our image. Either you're going to succeed or you're going to fail. How big a responsibility is that? Is that too much pressure?
Well, I like pressure.
And you, Lerato, do you also like pressure like that?
You know, I think one of the things being in the space of communication, we thrive under pressure, you know, and I think it's same as you being a reporter, you know, if there's nothing to chat about, then there's no news. But where there is drama, that's where you are going to find it. And our role is to clean up the drama in as quickly as possible way, but also ensuring that, you know what, your client, your brand, is still seen as a brand that people want to associate with. Because I think at the end of the day, you want to build a brand of which people can actually talk about it today, tomorrow, and forever, you know. So it's a matter of ensuring that, you know what, okay, this is the situation. How are we going to get out of it? Okay, let's actually place all the different options on the table. If we take this option, it's going to lead us there. No, maybe not. If we take this option, it's actually going to take us here, and it will create other possibilities. So you don't do it alone as a manager, but you have a team. You bring in stakeholders. You bring in organizations, people who make the final decisions to say, what is the best way of moving forward? And, you know, I like what, you know, my fellow colleague has just mentioned, that, you know what, at the end of the day, you are still at the mercy of a client. So you just try to present the best possible solution, because, again, it's not just about them as a brand or as a person. It's also about you and your business.
Mm. I'm going to take a quick ad break. When we come back, I will continue the chat. We are exploring the world of reputational management and communications. And if you are in that space, I'm willing to take your calls. I've got your voice notes coming through as well on 072-702-1702. It's going up to 20 minutes after 11.
Cross the Desk
with Clement Manyatela
on 702.
It's 22 minutes after 11 o'clock. I've got Chris Vick, who's a communications consultant, and Lerato Kadiaka, who's the founder and CEO at African Ambition. We're talking about reputational management. Chris, I've got to ask this, because you guys often in the space of your work, you deal with crisis communication and stakeholder management. And I've been wondering lately how, as a reputational manager, you would have dealt with the so-called dollar gate or the pala-pala gate. When you look at what's happened, how the presidency has communicated, is that the best way to deal with it? Because some of us look at it and think, well, there's lack of transparency. If you've got nothing to hide, you've got a moral duty then to at least say to South Africans, this is what happened. Because either way, that's not going to change. That's a statement that you're going to tell the Hawks or whatever law enforcement agency is investigating. Has it been handled well by the strategy of remain silent, keep quiet?
Well, I don't envy Vincent Magwenya, I must say. And I say that for two reasons. When you get involved in a reputation management process, you're often subject to the decisions of your principal. So even if the communication strategy which was presented to the president was rock solid, it would still be the president's call and probably his lawyer's call how they would action that. I mean, if you look at the phases that Pala-Pala Gate or Farm Gate has gone through, initially the presidency was quite open when they were confronted with Arthur Fraser's police charge. In, you know, there was a sense of transparency, and I think that backfired, if I look back at it, understanding the environment, because I think what happened was the more that was said, the more it opened up questions.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the reason why we've seen that sort of information blackout. I mean, we're still owed answers on how much money was under the bed. I remember Vincent saying about 3 weeks ago that they were going to count the money. You know, even that sort of information hasn't come through yet. I think almost a schizophrenic response with full transparency, hey, we're here, we'll answer your questions, and then a complete shutdown, that has complicated things. But there's a stage before that, and I don't know if Lerato would agree with me. I think it's not just about communication. It's about the things you do to put your reputation at risk. So, you know, the real question would be to the president, why on earth did you have money stored in a mattress or in a couch? Because if he hadn't done that, there wouldn't have been a robbery, there wouldn't have been the allegations of abduction of accused, etc. So that for me, I mean, that's always the key thing if I consult, whether it's a policy, corporate or an individual, is don't do things that are going to bring about reputational damage. Think about your reputation 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Is what I'm doing going to alert or bring trouble?
If they're going to be considerate like that, Chris, then you would be out of a job.
I would be fine because I have other skills. You know, I could open a jazz bar or something. But I think, you know, it's the self-inflicted reputational damage. It does create a lot of work for us, but so much of it could be avoided by common sense, by thinking about things before you do them. And it's not just politicians. I mean, I remember the time when Sunday World front page was full of scandals about DJs caught bonking car parks and things like that, soccer players who bought their cars. That is all about action. That is not about communication. And you can try and clean it up, and you can try and repair the damage, but the damage remains, you know. And I think you made the point earlier about a narrative. You can develop a narrative, but if the initial action is stupid, it's very hard to put it in a positive shape of light.
Yeah. Lerato, in a case like Phalaphala, I'm interested to hear your thoughts as well. What's best to do? Is it rather keep quiet, or I'm known for transparency, therefore let's communicate something? Because what Chris says is, which is I think is true, is if you respond so swiftly without properly considering, you are digging deeper. In this context, the spokesperson was telling us we're going through invoices. The spokesperson said, well, the president didn't open a case because he didn't want to create panic in the community. And then later on, they say, actually, the president has increased his security at the farm. And I was thinking, what? So you didn't tell your community members about the crime because you didn't want to create panic. And yet, you used that information to increase your security. They are now exposed and haven't had the opportunity to do that. And you are okay with that? So is it always advisable to speak quickly so that you control the narrative? Or is it better to just keep quiet and continue to be criticized by the likes of Clement for not being transparent enough?
Yeah. So you know, that for me was quite an interesting case. Because there's two ways to this, Clement. I keep quiet, either way the story has broken out, right? And I say something quickly, either way I would probably, you know, put myself in a situation where it would be damaging for my brand and for my organization. So with the Phalaphala situation, for me it was exciting and also interesting because if I was in their PR shoes or being just a manager regarding his reputation, it would have been a matter of, how do I make sure that, you know, as the president still is clear, even though in the background we are still investigating,
yeah,
right? And the best way to do that is to then, you know, firstly, you're guilty, but show confidence. So what I saw from there was, you know, the president was confident, but obviously we knew very well that he was just like battling a lot of internal demons, right? Mm. That's one. Number two, you know, you have to also make sure that, you know what, what is going to be our strategy? You know, how are we going to manage this? But also at the same time, you know, business as usual. And I think that's what happens a lot here in our country, whereby we are having a serious critical conversation, a serious situation, but somehow, on the other hand, it is business as usual. So for me, how I saw it was like, you know, this is actually quite smart. Yes, you're saying all these things, but it's still business as usual. And I think the one thing for me that was like, you know, as they would say, like, drop the mic, was when, you know, we heard that they're actually going to have an auction. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I mean, this is like really business as usual.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we have all these things, we have all these activities planned, but also at the same time, let's focus on what we need to do,
yeah,
and it's business as usual.
Does it help, Chris, for your... did it help last night for his screensaver to be that of Uncle? Because... I mean, his iPad was there when he was addressing the media with the Deputy Chief Justice, and the screensaver was like, boom. And then there was now a clip that's now circulating of the president suggesting that his job as a president is like a second-hand job, but his main is being the president of the Association of Ankole. because timing is important, right? And you don't want to create innuendos and create unnecessary suggestions. So maybe being quiet and just taking it easy is probably the way to go.
I'd agree, and I agree with Lerato. I mean, you do have to have the persona of business as usual, even if you're burning inside. I think the difficulty I had with the Zondo handover, which I think is what you're referring to, is we had a president giggling, and
you know
what we all think when we see a president giggling, right?
Why do they do that?
It's just you'd have to ask him or ask Vincent. But I mean, I just think I don't think there's a full consciousness. Yeah, because the other thing when you work in government, and I've done three stints, is it becomes a bit of an echo chamber, right? Where you hear what you want to hear and you filter out what you don't like. And I would imagine that within the presidency, there's a sense of, well, this thing is going to blow over. Zondo has implicated Fraser, therefore it's 1-1 now. It's not 1-0 to Fraser. That's a problem, you know, because I think that the anxiety and the level of disappointment that has been driven among people who were very supportive of President Ramaphosa because of this incident, I think that's being underestimated. I think the damage within society, maybe not within the ANC, but the damage in broader society has been very profound. And how you manage that is really, really critical. And it's about the right place for the right occasion. Zondo was a very serious moment, and I think it should have been handled with a lot more dignity and a lot less bull buffalo visibility.
Yeah. Buffalo visibility. Yeah, it's just so awkward, man. When you look, someone, actually, Motel Kwaripe, our colleague here at EWN, tweeted that these giggles, it's almost like they're handing over a report about some progressive policy. Like, just read the room. And it's not just even Cyril Ramaphosa. Remember former President Jacob Zuma? He did it so many times. I don't remember much about Thabo Mbeki, but I thought he had always, most of the time, had the serious face. But yo, Jacob Zuma and Cyril Ramaphosa, my goodness. It's just after 11:30.
Across the Desk
with Clement Manyathela
on 7:02.
24 minutes before 12 o'clock. I see your calls coming through. I'll take some of them. Your WhatsApps as well on 072-702-1702. Let me go through some of your tweets. Menzi Mumalo says, to me, Clement, this Palapala Farm saga shows us that we are very selective. Imagine if it was those that we don't like. In any event, we'll forget this soon in a way that demasking and the report is taking our attention away. And then Kaurelo says, you guys need to decide. You used to accuse Mbeki of being aloof. Ramaphosa plays the fallible fella that he is. He's now being slammed. PR people want to make people into politically correct robots and devoid of character and spontaneity, and they are here for you. Rems Mabota says, a correction, Clement, if our clients stayed clean, as Chris Vick says, reputational management managers would not be out of a job. All that would happen is that we would not be in contentious crisis mode. We would have time, enough time, to build personal brands and their reputation, which I think is actually fair, right? Because then you're focusing on building from scratch the good brands and not dealing with crisis management. So Chris Vick is a communications consultant, and Lerato Kadiana is a founder and CEO at African Ambition, and these are the guests I'm hosting on the show this morning. Lerato, yeah, did you want to come in there?
Yes. So I want to agree with, you know, our audience that mm-hmm. has shared their opinions, because I think at the end of the day, whether we like it or not, the Palapala situation, it is there, right? And it's not going to go away. Whether we like it or not, it's not going to go away. But you find that as a president, you also need to still be in good light. So my role now is to make sure that, you know what, our president is still a good person. You know, yes, all of these things are happening in the background, but at the end of the day, we have taken action, and we are going to comment on things that we know that are going to benefit him. Not necessarily for the party, not necessarily for the audience at large, being us, you know. So you find that now you find yourself as a reputation manager having to just duck and dive, just to make sure that you only say what you want the public to be comfortable with. Mm-hmm. But you know very well that it will always have two sides to every story. Because if we actually had to have a poll, you'd find that there'll be a group that says, you know what, we are supporting our president with what is happening with Palapala. And you will have another group to say, no, we are not supporting. You know, so I think that's when you see the power of communication and the power of, you know what, who said it best? You know, and which side am I
going to
go with?
Yeah. Chris, there's a tweet I read here, and then, which is probably fair, because I said, you know, and you were talking about the president who was giggling last night, and I was saying, even with the former president, Jacob Zuma, he used to giggle all the time. And with the former president, Thabo Mbeki, I remember him mostly as just a serious face most of the time. And Khaogelo on Twitter says that, well, we used to accuse Mbeki of being aloof. Ramaphosa plays the fallible fella that he is, and he's now being slammed. Which one is best to do? Just should you be like Zuma, who was probably just genuinely like a lovely person who was relatable, who always was laughing and wanted to have a chat with the so-called ordinary masses? Or should you be like Ramaphosa, who is always trying to show you that he is not this far detached president, but someone who can laugh with you and even giggles even when it's unnecessary? Or just be like Mbeki and be genuine and just do your job?
Well, Clement, it's probably a case. I don't think there's a sort of one size fits all. I think you would expect the head of state to be themselves, right? To be comfortable in their skin. And I think most of the time, the three presidents you've referred to were comfortable in their skin. I think the point is, when there are times of crisis, and I'm not just talking about Palapala. I mean, I look at the economy, I look at unemployment, I look at the situation facing young South Africans, and we're just coming out of a COVID pandemic. Yeah. I think in times of crisis, you would want a president to appear presidential, experienced in statecraft, confident in the affairs of the state, on top of issues. I think that's what we expect from leaders, right? We expect leadership. How they do it does depend on their personality. But I think the other reality to remember in South Africa is we've never had a president who's loved by everybody. Even Madiba had his haters.
True.
And the reality with President Ramaphosa is he has people who approve of what he's doing and would probably not be fazed by the sight of a bull on his iPad. But there are people who don't have confidence in him and who are looking for leadership during this time. That, in a sense, is the difficulty of reputation management. I mean, I worked with a politician whose theory was 30% of society will love you, 30% of society will hate you, and the other 30% don't give a damn, or 40% don't give a damn. And I think that's often true, you know. You can't please all the people all the time. Mm. What you should work on is at least pleasing the people who are on your side and not alienating them. Mm. Could I make one other point?
Sure.
Because I think it is broader than President Ramaphosa. One of the key roles that I play when I'm providing reputation management guidance is it's critical that you understand the environment in which you're operating, and in particular that you understand public sentiment, that you're keeping track of what's on social media, you're keeping track of the commentators and analysts and what sort of published as news, and that to some extent informs how you then approach the environment. If the environmental scan and understanding of the environment you work in shows that there are people who are beginning to doubt you, you need to take steps to rebuild that confidence. And I think maybe that's where there's a bit of a mismatch in Farmgate, is I don't think there's a full understanding of how seriously this issue has affected public confidence in the president in terms of his morals, in terms of his financial management, in terms of how he deals when he's confronted by the sort of evidence that Arthur Fraser has come forward with. And that requires an objective approach, not an echo chamber approach, where you reinforce each other's views. Like, it's okay, we can go out there and joke about it. People love us anyway. That's a fundamental mistake.
So picking up on that, Chris, I'm interested to know, though, how do you then influence, let's say, for example, commentators? And do you even attempt to influence them? Because you said you have to keep track of what's being reported, keep track of what the commentators are saying. So if you're finding out that Clement is anti this brand or anti this organization and is starting to create, use his platform to create doubt around this brand, how do you handle it? Do you take me out to dinner, offer me money, or try to offer me an interview with the person you think I'm anti so that you can control the narrative? How do you normally go about it?
Well, those are the trade secrets that I'm not allowed to discuss. I mean, the principle, look, it depends who it is. I would not advise a client to spend any time trying to convince a journalist on the Star or in the Independent group to change the way they're covering an issue because there's a particular agenda at play there. It's disinformation and it's dangerous stuff. But I think where there are journalists who have an interest in hearing about the deeper side of the story or another side of the story, it's about engagement. You have to engage with the people and not just, I mean, I don't offer money. And I know there are some people who do. I mean, that's bribery. But I think engagement, conversations, off the record briefing, background discussion. And if you believe what you're being told, great. If you don't, it's your choice what you do with it. But I don't think you can sit back and say, well, we're just not going to talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, one last point.
Yeah.
I think the ANC from 1990 to sort of 1995 was particularly skillful at doing these sort of background briefings about policy changes, about the way that society was moving. And it's kind of, it's preparing the ground, right? You can't plant seeds on concrete. You can plant seeds in soil and grass. So what you need to do is soften the ground for important announcements, background context, etc. That's where the real work gets done. The press releases and stuff are the kind of formality, but the more you can build an understanding or try and build an understanding among decision makers, influencers, opinion shapers, etc., the best.
Wonderful. I think we're losing the Chris, if you can move around a little bit, please, I would appreciate that. Let's listen to this voice note.
Hi. The work of reputation management is not to run around like fire brigades putting off fires. It's to ensure that the client never gets into trouble. So when you see clients who don't get into trouble and they are able to focus on their core business almost 100% of the time and not defending themselves in the course of the law or the course of public opinion, it's because they might have good reputation managers behind them who ensure they never get into trouble. So saying that when clients don't make trouble means that there might not be jobs for the reputation managers is almost saying like, well, there won't be jobs for street cleaners because people are not littering in the streets.
Got you.
Reputation management should
be 80%. Okay, let's finish it
up. Proactive, ensuring the clients never get into trouble, and only 20% reactive. You have to have a plan for just in case there's a problem.
Yeah, thank you so much for that voice note. That's Soli Mueng, by the way, who himself is a reputational manager. I think he lives in Switzerland now. Thank you for the voice note, Soli, agreeing with Rems Mabote there. Lerato, there's a question here from someone who's asking, hey, Clement, I'm a communication student, and I wanted to ask your guests, what advice would they give me as a building foundation for my career while I'm still a student? Any advice for this listener, Lerato?
Sure. No, definitely. I like that. So Clement, one of the things that we do on our side, because we are totally focused on marketing, digital and branding, and some of the services that we offer our clients is talent. And you know, when you have a young talent like that to say, you know, where do I go? What do I do? The first place for me is, you know, use what you have, right? So in as much as I'm in my second year, the first thing then I need to do is, you know, how can I then get myself, my brand out there? You know, what can I do right now? All right, I'm staying in Soweto. There's an NGO close to me. How can I work with them and just offer my services in terms of the skills that I am acquiring from my varsity, so that as you grow and as you build this career of yours, you are able to then present it to an organization later on to say, you know what, while I was still studying, I was working with these three NGOs and I was working with this small organization and I was helping them. Because I find that with young people, you know, for them it's always about, okay, I will just study and start looking for jobs right at the end. But as soon as you say, I am going to pick communications as my career, then the very first year, you need to start carving that career upwards.
Mm.
And that's a matter of like, okay, now I'm studying comms. All right, what am I going to do? Okay, we have social media. We have all of these things. What can I do? What organizations around me can I start working with so that by the time when I graduate, you know, actually you even have better options, actually get into entrepreneurship and decide to have your own agency because you've already started doing the work, but also getting a mentor that mm-hmm. can help you in ensuring that your business becomes a solid yeah. business and someone is guiding you.
All right, Lerato La Diaka, thank you for responding to that. After the break, I want to ask Lerato and Chris, if they had one or two advice for those implicated in the state capture report, what would it be? Do you employ the defense strategy? Do you just keep quiet? Do you challenge the report? What would they advise those that are implicated in the state capture report and their reputation have been damaged? It's 10 minutes before 12.
Across the desk
with Clement Manyathela
on 702.
9 minutes before 12 o'clock. Chris, there are so many people that have been implicated in the state capture report. I went through some of the names this morning when I started the show. And we've seen in the past with the other four parts of the reports that were released much earlier, how, you know, people like Gwede Mantashe came out and said, well, we are going to fight this. We will approach the courts, and then they don't approach the court. And maybe they're waiting for the final report before they do. What would you advise to these people? Just tell the truth, be honest, and apologize, or employ the defense strategy. Yes, Chris?
Is your question to both of us, Clement?
Yes, it's to both of you. I'll start with you first.
Thanks. And I'm sorry about the breakup. I think someone was using a cell phone grabber on me. I mean, you're essentially talking about a clique of crooks, right? We're not talking about people who are unfairly implicated.
Mm.
Anyone who lived in South Africa from 2015 to 2022 knows what was going on. It's not a secret. And the reality is that crooks don't often confess.
Hmm.
You know, they protest their innocence. I would be interested to find one person who is prepared to break ranks, someone who would recognize that there's an opportunity here to be different to the crooks, to open up, to say I was wrong, to show some remorse, and to explain why they did it. I think that would have a phenomenal impact on the other implicated people. But the reality is this is a political battle. It's not just about state capture. And I think that most of the people who are implicated are hoping that one day they will replace President Ramaphosa with someone who will give them a sort of blanket amnesty and life goes on. And as long as they have that hope, it's unlikely that we're going to see a change in attitude. It's
yeah.
going to be pursuing legal warfare against the state, challenging these things as much as possible. And I think that's hugely unfortunate. I think there's a huge opportunity now for one or two to break ranks and just take the public into their confidence and really sort of reset the dial on what state capture is all about.
Mm. But the reality then, Chris, is that sometimes reputational managers are hired by the crooks themselves because they're trying to clean their image.
Not sometimes, always. I mean, it's almost an inevitable response.
Yeah.
But the first thing you do is hire a lawyer and hire a PR person alongside them, and they work in tandem.
Mm. Oh, there's that line again, disappointing us. But I think we got that point by Chris. Lerato, what would be your advice?
I think first and foremost, we need to bring back public confidence, you know, from these leaders. And for me, I would rather start off with saying, you know what, accept it. You've done wrong, right? You've taken the money. You've taken the money. Let's accept that. But also, let's turn that negative conversation into a positive conversation. How do you do that? You need to now start ensuring that, you know what, you create possibilities and opportunities for people to start making their own. So, for instance, I would rather say, you know what, yes, I've taken the money, but you know what, some of it, this is what I'm doing in my community. I am building schools, I'm building libraries, I'm helping our society, I am contributing where I can contribute. And also more than anything, because remember, Clement, it's about my career. And I think sometimes we leaders think that they are not replaceable, and they are replaceable. But for you and having a longevity in your career is to realizing that, you know what, you have done the negative. How are you going to move from that and actually create positives from that?
Would you advise them to resign? Because, I mean, if someone says to me, yeah, I know I stole the money, but here's what I did with it. I built this school. I'm like, you shouldn't have stolen that money in the first place. So would you say resign because... Yeah, just you've got a moral duty because that way, I mean, look at Tlantlanene. Yeah. Tlantlanene was probably the first member of the executive that I remember who resigned because he wasn't so honest at the state capture inquiry. And I thought, my goodness, we had so many ministers who have done worse, and yet they couldn't take that moral responsibility, that ethical responsibility. But Tlantlanene now is often seen as, we know you didn't tell the complete truth, but we appreciate what you did to recognize that what I did is wrong and I must step aside. So would you advise maybe step down, because that somehow to an extent saves this image that's damaged?
Correct. No, definitely. I would advise them to step down one by one. They must just step down, because at the end of the day, when you step down, you are saying, I'm taking accountability. You know, I am owning my actions and I want to do better in the future. But what we are finding now, we are finding that, you know what, even our disciplinary processes are not fully in place, because the very same leaders would still be getting their full salaries, even though they've already actually gotten more from us, you know. So the best thing to do is, you know, resign. Your dignity comes first. But unfortunately, we are dealing with leaders who are not really owning up to anything.
Absolutely. Lerato Kadiaka, founder and CEO at African Ambition. Chris Vick, communications consultant. Thank you guys for making time.